Welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
This episode comes with a content warning for violence and intimidation basically throughout, and also some minor references to alcohol. More details in the episode notes. We are now starting into Chapter 3, which I am very excited for.
Yeah, this has been hyped up a lot.
I hope it lives up to it.
Given the action-packed nature of the past couple of chapters, I mean, you know, you played those down, and then there was like a monkey battle with a portable army and lasers, and you know, I'm wondering what's going to happen in Chapter 3. I'm on the edge of my seat here, Quiv. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think it's really the character-defining chapter for the Monkey King. Woo. So to have a very brief recap in the previous chapter, the Monkey King learned the secrets of immortality, but was thrown out by his teacher and returned home to his role as the Monkey King with new magical powers, which he used to defend his kingdom and defeat the monstrous King of Havoc. And now he feels like a bit of a big man.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. We know he's been, you know, hubris has been a problem for this guy before, but I kind of feel like he's earned a bit of a self kudos there, a bit of a pat on the back.
Yeah, but he does take it a bit too far. He starts play acting at training all his monkeys into an army.
Of course he does.
They sharpen bamboo shoots to make spears and make little wooden swords and start parading around the mountain waving flags and banners.
Oh, that's cute, but also kind of fascistic.
Yeah, after a while, he realizes that playing at militarization could be quite dangerous. He starts thinking that other kingdoms, animal or human, might start seeing him as an actual threat. And all they have to defend themselves is sharpened bamboo. So
I mean, and his Wukong, portable army.
Yeah.
Sorry, I cut across you there, but I feel like the portable army is a big thing.
That's a fair point, but he's not always going to be around. Like
true. Don't get me wrong. I'm totally on board with the let's not start a war thing.
Yeah, you see, Wukong's actual conclusion then is that the only logical course of action is to actually militarize and get some real weapons.
Of course! Of course it is.
And he's saying all this aloud as he's thinking it, like, in front of all his subjects, and starts a bit of a panic.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm on the subject side here.
Yeah, so four of the older monkeys, two female monkeys with red buttocks and two bareback gibbons come forward. They say that the Auli country is 200 miles to the east across the sea and he can buy weapons there. So Wukong just decides to fly there immediately without any further thought to the matter.
I guess he can. Also, I love how the buttocks are specified.
Only for the female monkeys. We only find out what color the female monkeys' buttocks are, obviously.
I mean, the gibbons were barebacked. I mean...
True. So, 200 miles takes, you know, about 2 milliseconds for Sun Wukong to cross. So, he arrives there pretty quickly. And he looks down from the clouds at the city. And he thinks, you know, buying all those weapons might be a bit expensive, and it would be cheaper just to steal everything with magic powers.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Also, I'm not sure he actually has any money.
Yeah, fair. We've never heard of these people bartering with others before. They seem to be fairly self-sustaining.
Yeah. So he casts a spell to summon a huge storm. He just inhales a deep breath and blows out like a hurricane. And everyone in the city runs for shelter. Wukong flies down and kicks in the doors of the armory and just steals everything, using his body division magic to make as many monkeys as he needs to carry everything. And he just flies home. That's it. No problems whatsoever.
This guy does not do subtle.
No, he does not. He just flies home, shouts, "Little ones, come and receive your weapons," and starts passing out swords. The next day, he assembles all the monkeys for training and counts them up, and there's 47,000 armed monkeys now.
Whoa.
In charge of this kingdom.
I kind of feel like there were less, or at least I imagined less, back in the whole waterfall with mysterious Marie Celeste table that was never mentioned again days.
Yeah, no, I don't think that they ever specify it until now. And yeah, there's apparently 47,000.
Okay, population of Waterford, Ireland, roughly. A Waterford full of armed monkeys.
Yep.
Yep.
And they're not the only animals on the mountain either. And in fact, it goes on to say all the other animals and lists out wolves, insects, tigers, leopards, moose deer, fallow deer, river deer, foxes, wildcats, badgers, lions, elephants, apes, bears, antelopes, bears, musk oxen, chamois, green one-horned buffaloes, wild hares, and giant mastiffs were all so impressed / terrified that they all started paying annual tributes to the Monkey King. And some started providing soldiers for his army as well. So now there's even more of them.
This sounds kind of like a protection racket. But I must say, I am glad that the insects got a look in there.
I'm curious about the green one-horned buffaloes.
Yeah, that's... What? I don't have the greatest visual imagination, but I'm just trying to picture that and failing miserably. Cross between a unicorn and a cow.
I know it's probably kind of a unicorn arrangement, but I'm just kind of thinking, when I try and picture it, I just picture a buffalo just with a horn on one side.
A lopsided little buffalo, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's fine for a while until Wukong gets in one of his moods again and he decides he doesn't like the scimitar he's been using. So the four elder monkeys again come forward. They say, well, you're a divine sage now. An earthly weapon just isn't suitable. And then they ask, do you know how to swim? And Wukong answers, I have the ability of 72 transformation. The cloud somersault has unlimited power. I'm familiar with the magic of body concealment and the magic of displacement. I can find my way to heaven or I can enter the earth. I can walk past the sun and the moon without casting a shadow, and I can penetrate stone and metal without hindrance. Water cannot drown me nor fire burn me. Is there any place I can't go?
I'm getting a no from all that.
The four monkeys reply, it's a good thing that the great king possesses such powers, which I cannot help but imagine being said in the exact same tone of voice that everyone uses in that episode of The Twilight Zone, It's a Good Life,
yeah.
Where there's a small omnipotent boy that everyone is terrified of.
Yeah.
I think that's just life on Flowerfruit Mountain now.
Oh, those poor Flowerfruit Mountain residents. I'm kind of picturing them going, yes, and that's great. And just kind of mentally filing away the fact that he did not answer that question. And just kind of going, we need to prepare an exit strategy.
Yeah. Like this, what everything I read there was a verbatim quote. So the response is, it's a good thing that the great king possesses such powers. Which is like almost exactly how that everyone talks in that episode as well.
Yeah.
It's a good thing you turned him into a jack in the box. And they continue anyway. The water below the sheet iron bridge of ours flows directly into the Dragon Palace of the Eastern Ocean. If you're willing to go down there, Great King, you will find the old Dragon King from whom you may request some kind of weapon. So Wukong satisfies with this, jumps off into the water and casts a spell of water restriction so that the water just parts for him as he approaches it.
Okay, so swimming.
No, yeah, he actually can't swim.
Yeah, no, I got that.
he can't swim, but he's able to just like Moses the water away.
Okay, that's fair.
So when he reaches the ocean floor, he runs into a yaksha on patrol, and a yaksha is a kind of a spirit. I did a little bit of skimming on it, and it seems like they're portrayed very differently in various stories and legends. In this book in particular, they tend to be found in water.
Okay.
The Yaksha asks Wukong who he is. Wukong, who didn't know this place existed 10 minutes ago, says, "I am the heaven-born sage son Wukong of the Flower Fruit Mountain, a near neighbor of your old Dragon King. How is it that you don't recognize me?"
I also feel like this guy has basically come into this Yaksha's house.
Yeah.
And parted it Moses style. Just kind of like, yeah, no, just wandering through your territory like I own the place. Sorry. Do you know who I am? It's just, yeah, holy hell. Oh, this guy is insufferable.
So the Yaksha hurries back to the palace and he announces Wukong to the Dragon King, whose name is Ao Guang. Ao Guang goes out to greet Wukong with dragon sons and grandsons, shrimp soldiers and crab generals, and invites them into the Water Crystal Palace. I love the names in this book.
I'm sorry, but shrimp soldiers just sound adorable. I'm just picturing them with their tiny little weapons. That's just... aw.
Mm. And they chat for a while, and Wukong asks Ao Guang if he has any divine weapons to spare. And Ao Guang sends a perch commander to bring out a long-handed scimitar for Monkey. The various ranked sea creatures will continue.
Okay, great. Oh my god, do we get a whole, like, hierarchy of these?
There's a couple more, at least.
Amazing.
So Wukong says he doesn't know how to use a scimitar, despite the fact that that's the weapon he has used exclusively up to this point.
Oh, okay.
So Ao Guang sends a whiting lieutenant and an eel porter to get a 9-pronged fork, and Wukong tries it out and he complains it's too light.
I am picturing the eel porter wearing a tiny hat, and nothing will be able to convince me that this was not the case. This is the author's intention. Tiny hat on the eel porter, perhaps a pork pie or some sort of some sort of little bowler.
There's definitely a hat. But yeah, Wukong complains that the weapon is too light, and Ao Guang laughs and asks if he's sure, because the fork weighs 3,600 pounds.
He is just flexing at this point.
Yeah, so units, very important to me.
Okay.
There's a unit called a catty that's referred to as like a Chinese pound, and this is roughly 2,200 kilos, so double the weight of my car.
Wow. What the fuck is that thing made of?
Heavy shit.
Yes, okay. We will go with that.
So Monkey insists the fork just doesn't suit him anyway. And Ao Guang is getting a little frightened at this point. So he sends a Bream Admiral and a Carp Brigadier to get Idge. Are you just imagining the Brigadier from Doctor Who as well?
Yes.
And they bring back a giant halberd wearing 7,200 pounds, so four cars about at this point, and Wukong complains it's still much too light.
Stop it. Take the weapon. Just throw this man into the sea. He can't swim.
I mean, can they?
Yeah, fair. Fair.
Ao Guang is shitting himself a bit, and he says he doesn't have anything heavier than that. But Monkey insists that he's a Dragon King, he's bound to have lots of treasures, just go look for something. And Ao Guang's like, there really aren't any more.
Oh god, retail flashbacks. It's like, no, we do not have a secret treasure trove of things in the back. Lady, you can talk to my manager all you want. I can't magic your request for you.
Keep that thought in mind for later on.
Oh my god, he's gone from the white guy with dreadlocks who's gone to find himself in India to Karen. Karen the Monkey King. Sungwoo Karen.
At this point, the Dragon Mother and her daughter grab Ao Guang's attention. I'm not sure if the Dragon Mother is Ao Guang's wife or his mother. I'm assuming it's his wife. They tell him that in the treasury they have a piece of iron that was used by the Great Yu to set the depth of the Heavenly River. And in the last few days it started glowing, so maybe that's a sign of something. And I have a couple notes on Great Yu and all that for the end. But for the moment, Ao Guang is a bit confused and he asks what would that be of any use to Wukong? And to which the Dragon Mother said, let's just give it to him. He can do whatever he wants with it. The important thing is to get him out of here.
I'm with her.
Aogong tells Wukong about it, and he asks for it to be brought out, but literally no one in the palace can actually lift it. So Aogong just escorts him to the treasury instead, and the rod is now glowing like the sun. Wukong girds up his clothes and goes to pick it up. It is more than 20 feet long and as thick as a barrel, and he picks it up easily.
I feel like that is extremely impractical as a weapon, though.
Well, as he agrees, as soon as he picks it up, he says that it would be handy if the rod was shorter, and it immediately shrinks a little bit.
Okay.
He examines it, and it's a solid black iron rod with golden bands on either end. Engraved at one end is the compliant golden hooped rod, weight 13,500 pounds.
It's nice of them to lay it out for him like that.
It's very conveniently labeled. It's like good consumer labeling practices going on.
Good, good. We love to see it.
And he orders it to shrink a bit more and adjust the size a bit, and he settles on a rod that's no more than 20 feet long and the thickness of a rice bowl, which is still
absurdly
big, considering he's like a 4 foot tall monkey.
Again, I just cannot see that being of much practical use when it comes to injuring people.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like an easy thing to wield.
Yeah, this is the size he settles on for most of the book, though. But I did spend far too long trying to work out how dense the rod is from like making various assumptions as to what thickness of a rice bowl means.
Nerd.
Yeah, but I worked out maybe a figure of 100 grams per cubic centimeter. 100 grams per cubic centimeter is about 9 times denser than lead.
But it's magic. You're forgetting the magic.
And yes, it's magic, and it's about 2/3 the density of the core of the sun. So it's pretty dense, and it's magic. I appreciate that. And I'm not trying to call it unrealistic. It's not even attempting to be realistic.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm just curious as to how it works
out. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for calling you a nerd.
It's a completely accurate label. But Monkey is delighted with his new weapon, and Aogong is literally shaking in fear now, and everyone else is just hiding.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I mean, I'm kind of looking at his behavior because I've been with him on this journey and kind of going, what a fucking knob, knock it off. But yeah, out of context, not knowing who this person is, that is terrifying.
He's waving around an iron rod easily that weighs like 8 cars. In any case, Wukong laughs and he says he's in Aogong's debt, and Aogong just says, don't mention it.
It's cool.
It's fine.
It's cool. Yeah. Just fuck off. That's all the payment I need.
But now Wukong has a weapon and he feels he needs proper fighting clothes to go with it. And Aogong's like, I don't have anything like that.
I mean, he's a dragon. What? Is he going to have stuff to fix it? To fit a monkey? All the various army ranks are sea creatures. It doesn't seem like there's anything that would suit a 4 foot tall monkey. I feel he's always asking for too much, but I think this is particularly a stretch.
Yeah, but he just says he's not leaving till he gets something.
Oh, come on. No.
Aogong says he really doesn't have anything, and if he did, he would have given it to him already. So at this point, Wukong really crosses the line and basically says, well, you know, if I don't, maybe I'll just have to test out the iron rod on whoever's closest.
Jesus.
Yeah, so Aogong begs for mercy and suggests going to see his brothers to see if they have anything, but Monkey is not going to go to their places. He's staying
here. Go home,
here.
Go home. Find a magic monkey or another one and get some stuff off him. Just leave this poor dragon and his adorable shrimp army alone.
Yeah, yeah. But Aogong sends a turtle general, which is a repeat of a rank that was already used. There was crab generals earlier. They've run out.
Well, you know, it seems like the ranks aren't species specific then.
Yeah,
and
that's good,
a turtle
at least.
General does sound adorable. He's got a little star on his shell.
But he sends the Turtle General to beat the iron and golden bell that signal an emergency to Aogong's brothers. And the other Dragon Kings arrive. So there's Aoquin, Dragon King of the Southern Ocean, Aoshun, Dragon King of the Northern Ocean, and Auron, Dragon King of the Western Ocean. They all like pool together and each provide one piece of an outfit from their treasures. Aoshun provides a pair of cloud-treading shoes the colour of lotus root. Auron provides a cuirass of chainmail made of yellow gold. And Aoquin provides a cap with erect phoenix plumes made of red gold. Monkey is delighted with his new clothes.
I am just so angry.
That he's just getting what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, come on, just that you're calling in your brothers to...
Yeah.
I bet he looks really stupid, too.
They don't sound very matching.
How are they fitting him? He's a four-foot...
I mean, maybe they shrink with the, like, the rod does.
Yeah, okay, the rod is magic. The clothes are magic. I will have to accept that. But, Jesus. All of my repressed service industry rage from years past accumulated is now just directed entirely at this small monkey.
And to rub salt in the wound, as he's leaving, he says, "Sorry to have bothered you."
I hate him so very much. I hate him with the intensity of a thousand suns. Sorry to oh my god. Where's Sabaody to give this fucker his comeuppance?
So spoilers, I guess, but Sabaody is never mentioned again. So, surprisingly, Wukong actually keeps his promise to keep quiet about who trained him, because, yeah, Sabaody is not mentioned at all ever again.
I mean, he's a scary fucker, and presumably one of the few people who could take him down at this point.
Yeah, Monkey gets absurdly powerful absurdly quickly. But in any case, with his new outfit and his new weapon, he returns home, and he casts a spell of cosmic imitation, which makes him grow 10,000 feet tall and terrifies everything on the mountain even more than they already were.
Fair.
When he's done, he shrinks back to normal size, turns the rod into a needle, and tucks it behind his ear for safekeeping.
I feel like this is going to be relevant.
Yeah, well, that's just kind of how he carries the rod from now on.
Okay, fair.
And the monkeys throw a big celebratory feast, and Wukong promotes the two female monkeys, who are given names now, Ma and Lu, to marshals, and the two gibbons, Beng and Ba, to generals.
Okay.
Which is better gender representation than most current governments.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Go Wukong. And then he basically just leaves them in charge to go tour the world at his leisure. Because he's a good leader. He becomes drinking buddies with six other kings. The Bull Monster King, the Dragon Monster King, the Garuda Monster King. Garuda's like a mythical king of birds, basically.
Okay.
The Giant Lynx King, the Macaque King, and the Orangutan King. One day, the monkey's four commanders organize a huge feast for the seven of them. And they all get utterly hammered and generally party through the night. And then after giving the other kings party gifts and sending them off, Monkey falls asleep under a pine tree. And in his sleep, two men approach him, and they have a summons with Sun Wukong written on it. They walk up to him without saying anything, tie him up and drag him off. As Wukong starts to wake up, they're dragging him into a city, and he opens his eyes and he sees a sign saying Region of Darkness and realizes he's in the world of the dead.
Oh, that's not good.
He asks, you know, why am I here? The two men say, well, you're dead. And Monkey is not pleased with this at all and insists that's bullshit because he's goddamn immortal. And the two men just take no notice and just keep carrying him. So Monkey behaves, you know, about how you'd expect. He takes the rod from it behind his ear, grows it to a normal size, and bashes the two of them with it, who are, I quote, reduced to hash.
Oh, that sounds unpleasant. I gotta say, though, I do love that there was a summons involved. I love an afterlife with paperwork.
Oh, the afterlife and heaven and the supernatural world in general is very bureaucratic in this.
Okay, I'm on board with that.
But Wukong is pissed. As far as he's concerned, he's immortal now, and he's not meant to be here, and he wants to see the fucking manager right now.
Oh my god. Oh, Song Wukong. Oh, yeah. Truly so terrifying.
He starts fighting his way into the city of the dead, and all the demons and ghost soldiers are running away in terror. And a group of soldiers run into the Palace of Darkness to tell the kings of the underworld what's going on. And they go out to meet Wukong and ask him who he is. And Wukong introduces himself and demands the kings of the underworld tell him their names or he'll beat the shit out of them.
He does have a very big stick.
This is true. And their names are King Qingguang, King of the Beginning River, King of the Song Emperor, King of Avenging Ministers, King Yama, King of Equal Ranks, King of the Time Mountain, King of City Markets, King of the Complete Change, and King of the Turning Wheel. And Wukong says, since you're all great kings, you'd think you'd have some fucking brains. Ooh. So why did you send for me when I'm immortal? I'm obviously adding in the cursing, but that is more or less what he says.
Yeah, okay. Clerical error.
Yeah. No, that is what they say. They suggest, maybe the summons was a mistake.
I should clarify, the reason I love afterlives with paperwork is that I just feel like it's important for these things to have like a concrete system and process. You know, if we're fucking around with eternity, there should be filing involved, is what I'm saying.
But in any case, Wukong demands to see the record books of the dead to verify them himself. And they bring out the record book for monkeys and they find Wukong's entry. Soul 1350, Sun Wukong, Heaven-born stone monkey, age 342 years, a good end.
It's a good age.
So, written down in black and white, he died. I feel like a good end is a euphemism for just, like, died in his sleep.
Yeah, peaceful.
342 years.
It's a good stretch.
Wukong doesn't agree. He demands a brush, crosses out his own name, and then starts crossing out as many names as he can, throws the ledger book on the ground, shouts, "Account closed," and runs away.
What does he expect to happen here? What?
Oh no, he's fine. He gets out. Oh, he just fights his way back out of the underworld and returns to his own body. And the four monkey commanders are there when he wakes up. And he tells them about his dream and he says that, hey, you're all immortal now. I crossed off all your names from the Book of the Dead. So they have another big party to celebrate that.
Is that true? Because it seems like he was
No, it is. Like the narration, everything confirms all the monkeys are immortal now.
Oh, this seems like it could cause some problems.
So, in the meantime, the Jade Emperor, who you might remember is basically King of the Gods.
Yeah.
Is holding court in heaven. And he's just finishing a formal letter of complaint from Ao Guang about the shit Wukong pulled in his palace.
I love that so much.
And as he's finished reading this letter, King Qingguang, Minister of Darkness, and Bodhisattva King Kashidigarb, Pope of the Underworld, which is the actual title the translation uses for him, show up to complain about Wukong rampaging through the afterlife and the fact that he has made all monkeys immortal.
Seems like something that should be addressed with some urgency.
I also just love the fact that when he does it, he shouts out, "Account closed." Like the actual verbatim quote in the translation is, "That ends the account."
Whew.
I just love that. Also, just on the titles there, aside from Pope of the Underworld, Bodhisattva is a term for someone who is on the path to Nirvana but has not yet achieved Buddhahood. And Kshitigarb, which, yeah, probably not saying that remotely correctly, but in any case, he's a legendary figure outside of this novel. And his backstory is kind of he took a vow not to attain Buddhahood until all purgatories are emptied of souls, which is nice.
Yeah, that's kind of sweet. Or a really good way of deferring your exams forever.
Oh, you might be onto him there, yeah. In any case, the Jade Emperor promises to have Wukong arrested. And once all the plaintiffs have left the court, the Jade Emperor just kind of thinks out loud, who the hell is this monkey?
fair question.
Thousand Mile Eye and Fair Windier from who you might remember as being very briefly mentioned in chapter one come forward and say that, oh, it's the same monkey that we saw with laser eyes that was born a couple hundred years ago, but they have no idea how he got this strong.
I know the laser eyes aren't coming back, but I'm really glad that some people found them as memorable as I did.
I can't actually remember if they say that in the book itself, or I just put that in my notes. I'm sorry.
Okay, fair. Damn. I like to think it will. Let me have my illusions.
Okay, I won't check.
You can check, just don't tell me.
In any case, the Jade Emperor asks who wants to go down and arrest him, and the long life spirit of the planet Venus comes forward and suggests, instead of arresting him, just summoning him to heaven and giving him a job to keep an eye on him and keep him out of trouble. If he causes trouble, then we'll arrest him. And if he actually does a good job, then great. It's a win-win.
That is actually a very good way to deal with a sociopath in your organization. Or a total control freak. You just give them a job that sounds important, but that they can't really mess up too much. And, you know, just tell them no one else can possibly do this job. We're so grateful to have you here, and you have ultimate control over the work, and then just keep a very close fucking eye on them.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, well, it's good to know that that goes back many, many, many years.
So the Jade Emperor agrees and orders the Star Spirit of Songs and Letters to write a decree and sends it down with the Gold Star of Venus to deliver. I think the Long Life Spirit of Venus and the Gold Star of Venus are the same person. I'm not positive, but I think it's just one, you know, Venus. In any case, Monkey receives the summons and he basically says, you know, I was thinking of taking a trip to heaven one of these days myself anyway.
Oh, I hate you so much. Sorry. It's just like a literal god has appeared in front of you. It's like, oh yeah, I might as well. Cool. I mean, on one level, I do appreciate the kind of flouting of authority there, but also, yeah, he's just proved himself to be that much of a jerk that I just want someone to kind of clip him around the ear.
So Wukong takes his job in heaven, and if you want to find out if someone does show him up, you'll have to listen to the next episode.
Okay. So that's, yeah, that was quite the chapter.
Yeah, I love this chapter.
He's such a jerk. He's just such a, like, he started off cheeky and, you know, lovable and kind of just thumbing the finger to authority, and has now taken on the, this is can kind of see the satirical element a lot clearer now, gotta say.
Yeah, I haven't done much reading on that in particular. I'm not really sure of which kind of parts are put forward as being the main satire, or what the kind of thesis is.
I might do some reading into that myself. I don't want to spoil too much of the story. But yeah, it seems to me to be like very much pointing the finger at, you know, that they're very much taking aim at leaders who, you know, would have seemed like the underdog and led an underdog kind of movement, and then got a little too into the power of it all and just kind of totally lost the run of themselves and become very irresponsible. And, you know, it's quite a conservative reading, really, when you're kind of looking at, you know, this guy is fucking the paperwork, he's tearing it up, and it kind of seems like in the beginning we were supposed to root for this guy, and now he's just, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, I'd love to know some more about the cultural context around it.
Yeah, there's definitely some chapters that very explicitly kind of get into bowing to the right authority is good, and there's good authority, which I'm not particularly fond of the morality of this book, to be honest.
No, I wouldn't be either. It's just interesting to me to see. It seems to be this jumped up little upstart, and he's very much painted in quite a negative light.
Yeah, I did promise one footnote on the Great You.
Yep.
So in the last episode, we went on a little bit of a tangent about the flood myth. Yeah, so China has its own great flood myth about a flood that lasts for several generations until Yu the Great was able to control the waters, basically just by civil engineering, digging canals and ditches to drain things.
I love that.
Emperor Yao was so impressed that he named Yu his heir instead of his son. And Yu started the Xia dynasty, which is traditionally said to be the first dynasty of China.
Very cool.
So that's it's kind of China's flood myth is also the national myth as well, apparently.
Amazing.
And again, this is mostly stuff I read on Wikipedia after digging through the footnotes of this book. Don't take me as an authority on anything.
That's a really fascinating attitude to it, because I know literally zero about Chinese culture, and have possibly if my kind of reactions to things have been inappropriate or offensive or misguided in any way, which they probably have. I do apologize, but yeah, I love the fact that it's just seen as this thing of like, there's a flood, cool. Well, this is a problem we have to solve, rather than in many other flood myths where it's this total, divine catastrophe that can only be remedied by the intervention of God or after. I mean, the Christians had only like 40 days, 40 nights, right? We didn't get it quite as bad.
Several generations, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. I really do love the fact that it's like, okay, so a flood happened. This is something we have to deal with.
Yeah. And it's not God solves it for people being pious. It's this guy actually managed to fix it, so we're making him king.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the kind of practicality at play there. But it's more just that, like, it was a human thing. It was just kind of this is an issue. We got to solve this. It's unfortunate. It's going to take some time. There we go. No more flood. That attitude of it is pretty interesting and pretty cool to me.
And so then in the book's version of this myth, this iron rod that Wukong ends up using as a weapon is a tool that Yu used to set the depths of all the rivers and oceans somehow. And in Chinese, the Milky Way is called the Heavenly River, which is a much better name.
It really is.
So this rod was also used to kind of define the Milky Way as well as every other river. So that's kind of the cosmic power of this weapon.
Do we know why we call it the Milky Way?
I think it's a Greek myth that it was literally one of the gods' breast milk.
Interesting. Okay.
Which is also why we use the word galactic. It's cognate with lactic.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's interesting then that this scientific instrument is being used as a weapon, and this extremely culturally important scientific instrument. That and the way that the kind of ancient knowledge that Spodi has given him, and arguably is kind of responsible for him misusing, given that he, rather than, correct his tendency to show off or kind of sit down and give him a good reason, he just kicked him out. Not to, absolve this fucker of any responsibility for his atrocious actions. But yeah, I don't exactly know where I'm going with this, but it's really interesting to me that there seems to be a lot here about the misuse of very powerful knowledge. And again, in a very conservative reading, there's some little icky stuff about that kind of ending up in the wrong hands.
Yeah,
I'm not sure though. I don't know enough about the cultural context in which this book was written to make any sort of judgment. But I do find that interesting.
Yeah, I do want to be sensitive about critiquing something that I have no cultural background in. But at the same time, I also don't want to. Like I kind of said in the intro, I don't want to treat it as this wholly apart tome that can't be criticized either.
Yeah, fair. I'm just, yeah, this is the three quarters of a BA in English operating, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, that's more than me.
If you want Chaucer poorly analyzed, you know who to call.
But yeah, that's it for everything I wanted to talk about for this chapter. So we'll find out in chapter four how well the appeasement plan goes.
Yeah, that's gonna be interesting.
And I guess we should do our little sign off. I have made a Twitter account for this podcast. It is Monkey King Pod. You can follow us there, and I'm on Twitter myself at Oakreef, OAKREEF, and MJ is Taoiseach O'Trash.
Yeah. That's Taoiseach, pronounced Taoiseach and spelled TAOISEACH for any non-Irish listeners. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Taoiseach O'Trash, Instagram at MJ Stokes, EMJAY Stokes. I have three other shows. All of them are currently on the Hysteria Ireland Network, Burning Shit with MJ Stokes, where comedians talk about their feelings with me, and then we set things on fire. That one's fun. The Nerd Herd, where I make comedians tell jokes about things they really love. That's also really, it's happy, it's positive, it's enthusiastic, and it's a bit nuts. And They Did What Now, as well, where I just get people to tell me about their favorite bizarre and ballsy stories from history. So yeah, you can find all of them on the Hysteria Ireland Facebook page at Hysteria Ireland. It's the same on all the various social networks that are designed to break your brain. So whichever one of those you like your brain broken by the most, you can find us there.
I'm only on Twitter, and I do not want to have to deal with Facebook ever again, so I'm not.
I don't like it.
So I'm not going to set up other social media accounts for this.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. I appreciate that decision very much.
I should like come up with a proper sign-off.
Need a catchphrase.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna write one.
What are
Like,
you what
comment,
are you fur? What are you
subscribe.
fur?
General entertainment. I do not need to be for anything. My worth as a human being is independent of my. I really have no purpose here other than to make the jokes. That's literally it.
I mean, that otherwise it would just be me summarizing a book that you could just read yourself.
But you do it so well. I appreciate the insight. Well, I guess thanks for having me on again, and thank you for listening.
Yes. Please like, comment, and subscribe.
I hate myself every time I have to say that.
Oh, bye.